Lee Nelson has spent the last 22 months as a CSTE Applied Epidemiology Fellow, working in the Bureau of Environmental Health and Radiation Protection at the Ohio Department of Health. She received her Master's of Public Health from the University of Michigan School of Public Health, and her work is focused in several areas, including environmental health, Great Lakes waterborne issues, and drowning prevention in Ohio. You did that in Michigan? No. Okay. And I asked everybody to give me something about themselves that has nothing to do with epidemiology, and Lee is a twin. So Lee is going to be talking about highlights of community health assessment, and we're going to let her go ahead and tell us all about it.
You're welcome.
Hello. I'm a twin, but I don't get to have the fun part of being a twin. We're very fraternal, so it's not like we could switch places. So like she was saying, I currently work, so I did most of that work in Ohio at the Ohio Department of Health during grad school. That was a whole nother area. So today I'll be speaking about highlights of a community health assessment following detection of microcystin toxin in a municipal water supply in September of 2014. So on August 1st, 2014, microcystin toxin was detected above the 1 part per billion threshold in finished water at the Collins Park Water Treatment Plant in Toledo, Ohio. On Saturday, August 2nd, approximately 450,000 people across four counties in two states were placed under a do not drink advisory at 1:20 a.m. The advisory was subsequently lifted on Monday, August 4th at 10 a.m. after 55 hours. So at this time, residents were instructed to flush their systems. It should be noted that prior to August 2014, EPA did not require municipal water suppliers to test for microcystin. However, municipal water supplied by the Collins Park Water Treatment Plant was regularly tested for microcystin during periods when algal blooms are more likely to occur in Lake Erie, which is typically July through October. Additionally, the Toledo water crisis was a novel event for not only Ohio, but for the rest of the country, with the exception of the Carroll Township water event that took place in September of 2013, about a year prior, in Ottawa County, which is one county over to the east of Lucas County, which is where Toledo is. And during this event, 2,000 residents were affected. Okay, and so this is an aerial view of Lake Erie's Western Basin, which was taken on August 4th, 2014. And the city is Starr. So you can see right coming in through the city is the Maumee River, which feeds into that Western Basin. Okay, our assessment had a few objectives. They were to characterize the population residing in the affected areas, assess the impact of the Toledo water event on households, and to assess communication efforts to identify effective approaches for current and future health events. So what is CASPER? I know there have been a few sessions, so I apologize if this is a repeat, but some of us here, while they may know already what a CASPER is, for those who are less familiar, CASPER stands for Community Assessment for Public Health Emergency Response. It is a technique which provides household-based information about the needs of a community, and it involves multi-stage probability sampling. Okay. So, I guess, why CASPER? I didn't actually add this until the very last moment because somebody was like, but why did you pick that methodology? Because this is actually the first time we've done a CASPER in Ohio. So to answer that question, I picked this methodology because it's designed to be quick and reliable. The CASPER methodology enables public health practitioners and emergency management officials to determine rapidly the health status and basic needs of the affected communities. CASPER is also flexible. It can be used in both disaster and non-disaster settings. Additionally, CASPER fosters teamwork across many agencies, so we don't get many opportunities to have this many people come together, and there's a sense of pride that comes with completing the task at hand. It really was a lot of work. Okay, CASPER preparation. There were many steps taken prior to data collection. First, we had to submit a study proposal and plan to the Ohio Department of Health Institutional Review Board, or IRB. And this isn't required for every CASPER, just since it was so new to our state, we wanted to go ahead and go through that process. Next, volunteer recruitment was conducted by our partners at Toledo Lucas County Health Department via community advertisement of the survey. So this is a volunteer information flyer that was created and sent out to various organizations ranging from volunteer groups and academic institutions. Okay. Next, CDC on-site technical assistance was requested by the Ohio Department of Health and Toledo Lucas County Health Department. And additionally, area police were notified of survey areas to ensure voluntary safety and to also mitigate community members' concerns. Interview teams consisted of Toledo Lucas County Health Department staff, Ohio Department of Health staff, Ohio Medical Reserve Corps members, American Red Cross volunteers, and local students. And then finally, a three-hour just-in-time training course was conducted by CDC on-site to prepare volunteers for surveying in the field. Okay. So for the sampling design, we wanted our sampling frame to represent those households affected by the Do Not Drink advisory. So our sampling frame was defined as households who received water from the Collins Park Water Treatment Plant in Lucas County, Ohio, which represents the majority or 84% of their customers. So we then implemented a two-stage cluster probability sampling technique using the 2010 U.S. Census data. In the first stage, 30 clusters or census blocks were randomly selected within the sampling frame. In the second stage, interview teams randomly selected 7 households within each individual cluster for in-person or household interviews with a goal of obtaining 210 interviews total. Okay, and just to give more of a visual, this is a map of our sampling frame and the 30 clusters we sampled households from. And here's a map of Ohio perspective. Again, Toledo, it's in Lucas County in the northwest region of the state. Oh, that's me, data collection. So with data collection, we had, so it was between September 11th and 17th, 2014, team collected surveys from 30 pre-selected clusters, and the survey itself consisted of 32 questions involving both multi-part and skip pattern questions. Survey interviews were designed to take around 15 minutes, and verbal consent was required before administering the survey. And to take part, respondents had to be 18 years or older and currently reside in the selected household. And as I mentioned before, teams did consist of local health department staff members and a staff member from either ODH or another volunteer. So we did do the two team members just for safety. Additionally, a lot of our surveyors were sanitarians, so they had ample experience working in this community, so we found it advantageous to send them to areas where safety might be a concern. It was pretty great. They would be able to point down to the street and be like, yeah, no, we'll go out there because we know the people. So that was really, really nice. Overall, we surveyed for 29 hours in the field, approaching a total of 647 houses and completing 171 interviews. Okay. So, let me see. This is, I wanted to provide a visual of what surveyors were given in the field. So each map would indicate the location of an individual cluster by latitude and longitude, and there would also be an approximate number of households noted within each cluster. So for each cluster, even though it's technically a census block, numbers would range from 7 households, even just under 7 households, to several hundreds. So this is 159 households, but some of them would literally just be a street block. Additionally, teams were instructed to use a tracking form such as this. And this was done to mark down house accessibility, the type of dwelling, whether or not the door was answered, and most importantly, what visit attempt number it was, as no house should be approached more than 3 times per interview before selecting another house to sample in its place. So eventually an interview would be marked as either complete or incomplete, and since we went out for multiple days, it wasn't guaranteed that we'd have those same team member available. So this tracking form is designed in a way so that anyone can pick it up and start from where hopefully the other team left off. We did try our best, it wasn't perfect. Okay, so after interviews were conducted, we conducted a weighted analysis based on the total number of households in the sampling frame to determine the projected number and percent of households with a particular response. So to do this, we applied a weight for each house surveyed to account, well, as shown in this, I won't go too much into it because there's a lot of information, but this was to account for the probability that the responding household was selected. And this would help us adjust for non-random sampling and obtain the population estimates of interest. We had a completion rate, like I said before, of 171 interviews out of 210. And in order to calculate population estimates with statistical accuracy, we needed to reach at least 168 interviews, or 80% completion. We reached 81.4%, which is great. And additionally, we had a cooperation rate of 55%, which means that for every two households who answered their door, one survey would be completed. Additionally, our contact rate was 26%, which is a little bit low, but for every four houses that were approached, one interview would be completed. Now, we had an average household size of 3.1 individuals. Census data showed an average household size of 2.4. While this does differ, we use Lucas County census data for comparisons, and some discrepancies may exist as our sampling frame did not consist of the whole county. Further, we had a house ownership rate of 70%, while census data showed a house ownership rate of 64%. I'm sorry, 62%. I'm just making up my own numbers. 88% of households contained individuals aged 18 to 64, followed by 49% containing individuals aged 2 to 17. 69% of households identified members of their household as white, and this is very close to census data at 70%. Additionally, nearly 30% of our households identified members as Black or African American, which also mimics census data at 27%. So I mentioned we use Lucas County census data. If you saw with the clusters, they are predominantly in the Toledo urban areas. There is census data for Toledo City. However, we went with the whole county, which was our sampling frame. So that could also account for other discrepancies, as those numbers also didn't match that exactly of Lucas County. Okay. When assessing household preparedness, we found that 9% of households reported having a three-day alternative water supply for each household member and pet before the advisory. And 22% of households had a three-day supply for each household member. When assessing household communications, we found that nearly one-third of households first learned of the advisory through television, followed by cell phone and text message. And a smaller proportion first learned of the advisory through social media, so think Facebook or Twitter. So, not surprising to me, an overwhelming amount of households considered television as the most reliable source for information at 73%, followed by social media, word of mouth, the internet, and radio. We also looked at how households received information about the location of water distribution sites, and we found that water distribution location information was most commonly received through television, face-to-face, and social media. You'll hear that a lot, that exact order. When looking at household use of municipal water during the advisory, because we also looked at during and after, but during the advisory, we found that 61% or 107 households reported using municipal water during the advisory. And of these households, municipal water was commonly used for the following purposes: showering and bathing, washing hands, brushing teeth, washing clothes, and of course, drinking the water. So when looking at household health impacts, we found that 16.2% or 25 households reported health issues they felt were related to advisory. So the health issues were all self-reported by the households at the time of the interview, just to clarify. Common symptoms reported included diarrhea, nausea, abdominal pain, vomiting, and skin irritation or itching. It should be noted that these symptoms are consistent with the results of an EPI investigation conducted on individuals who presented at emergency departments due to water exposure that same weekend. Additionally, about half of these households reported an onset of symptoms occurring before the Do Not Drink advisory was issued, while a third reported an onset of symptoms during the advisory. So the majority of households reported duration of symptoms as lasting less than 1 week, which is good. And while not large, a couple households reported seeking care at a primary care physician, I believe urgent care, and also an emergency room visit. And when asked why households did not seek medical care, the most common reason was health issues were not serious enough. We had a small percentage of households also report being unable to take oral medications due to an alternative water source not being available. And furthermore, a small percentage of households reported an interruption of routine health services, including dental care and mental health services. No households reported an interruption of outpatient surgical procedures or dialysis appointments. So that was really, really great to find out as well. Okay. When looking at self-reported, again, self-reported mental health related to the advisory, 7% of households reported feelings of anxiety or stress, followed by 5% reporting loss of appetite, and 4% reporting trouble sleeping or nightmares as a result of the advisory. And immediately after the advisory was lifted, 81.9% or 136 households continued to use an alternative source of water for the following purposes: drinking, eating or drinking food prepared with water, brushing teeth, giving water to pets, and washing hands. And so 6 weeks later, at the time of the survey, which we did go about 6 weeks after the event took place, 58.4% of households reported continued use of an alternative water source. So we found that 34% of all households looked for information or answers to questions about harmful algal blooms. 23% of all households looked to the internet for answers to questions via search engines such as Google. And so as you can see, if you look at Google Trend, find that it supports this, you'll notice a spike in internet search terms related to algae in the Toledo area at the time of the advisory. A little extra tidbit. So as a result of this assessment, many recommendations were developed. For considerations for future emergency planning, we recommend to promote water preparedness for all households. 67% of households reported not having a 3-day alternate source of water supply for each household member and pet in the home prior to the Do Not Drink advisory. And so encouraging households to have that 3-day supply of water for each person and pet in the household would aid in preparedness in response to any future health event, not just this one. Next, we recommend identifying ways to provide alternative water supplies in future emergencies, particularly to vulnerable populations. We did have several households reporting having difficulty taking oral medications as prescribed because they did not have access to an alternative source of water. So failing to take medications as prescribed may lead to negative health consequences, especially in people who have chronic health conditions. For considerations for future health messaging, we recommend that the public should focus on television while also employing multiple supplemental communication routes, such as social media, during disasters where communication infrastructure is intact. So we are very lucky in ours that all the TVs and everything was working. Nearly 3/4 of households did identify that television was the most reliable source for their household for information during the advisory. We also recommend to publicize health and mental health resources. 16% of our households reported having one or more health issues they felt were related to the advisory, and nearly 10% of households reported mental health concerns. Officials should promote community awareness of health and mental health resources to help prepare for really any future health event that may occur. Finally, we recommend to increase community education on current water recommendations. Our results indicated that 58% of households were still using an alternative source of drinking water at the time of the CASPER. Again, this was about 6 weeks after the event occurred. Increased community education about current water safety may alleviate some consumer concerns. And furthermore, there are some limitations that exist, and while some of them are beyond our control, the following should be considered. Sampling weights were created using information from the 2010 U.S. Census to determine household probability of being selected. So census data may, especially 4 years post-census data, may not be characteristic of the current population in the selected areas due to potential population changes in those areas since 2010. Additionally, as indicated by the low contact rate of 26.4%, survey teams had to approach many households within selected clusters to reach the necessary number of completed interviews. This may affect the representativeness of results, though we do know that local knowledge of the cluster areas did indicate a higher number than anticipated vacant or abandoned houses, which may have contributed to that lower contact rate if we really didn't know that somebody didn't live in the house and we were still trying to contact them by knocking on their door. Another limitation was recall bias, of course. Household surveys, again, were conducted approximately 6 weeks after the Do Not Drink advisory occurred, which may affect reliability of recall, particularly in questions examining exact dates and behaviors that occurred before, during, and after the Do Not Drink advisory. And I did mention this. Oh, there's me again. Furthermore, look great, don't I? Furthermore, volunteer safety was a major priority for us. When surveyor safety became a concern, surveyors would then be assigned to other clusters. This resulted in lower than expected interviews in some of those clusters. There's about two that we see, maybe one or two interviews. I personally was okay with that. Safety was of the utmost importance. And I'm excited to report that the final report became available on March 31st, 2015. And it can be found on both the Toledo-Lucas County Health Department webpage and ODH Environmental Health landing page. So that's pretty exciting. There's a lot more information in the report that goes along with what I said. Also, if you want to, you can just say Ohio Casper and Google that. All right, so we hope that these findings, of course, can be applied to emergency preparedness activities, that Casper training can be utilized for future response and or preparedness activities, and to contribute to a disaster epidemiology or to disaster epidemiology capacity within the state of Ohio. Again, we had CDC come on site, which is great, and they provided excellent training to help start that base for Ohio. And I can't express this enough. There were so many people involved in this project. I'd like to thank our partners at Toledo-Lucas County Health Department, as they did the majority of the heavy lifting with planning and conducting surveys in the field. I would also like to thank staff here at ODH from helping develop the survey to going out and surveying as well. I know a couple are in the room with me, Carolyn. I would also like to thank CDC for traveling to Toledo to provide training and technical assistance on site and during survey days. I'm going to point out Amy Casper. I see her there. So exciting. Everyone's here. I would also like to thank CDC's Waterborne Disease Prevention Branch, which I see a couple out there, and US EPA, as their expertise helped us develop a well-rounded survey. And most importantly, I would like to thank the interview teams. There might actually be one here. I don't know if she made it. She came out with us. There are many long days spent going door to door, and I really couldn't thank them enough. Thank you. Sure. So because there were, the only thing I can really speak to is we actually kind of had plans in place. I know what happened out of the 2013 event with Carroll Township, they came up with, I believe it's ODH, EPA, DNR came up with a strategic plan in case for at least public water systems. We've had an event like that before, not nearly as many people. However, when it comes to taking it out of the water, I'm not as familiar with that. I just know they were using multiple tests, and again, there was no regulation to be testing the water, so I don't know if those plans were in place because it was just a voluntary thing and wasn't even required. But I do believe your activated charcoal is one of the ways in PAC, and there's many ways to go about it, but I'm not confident that there were plans, but if there were, I'm hoping they followed them. But that's a really great question. I'm sorry I don't know as much detail in that area. Sure.
I'm Gloria from the Michigan Department of Health Administration. So, yeah, we've heard a little bit about this.
You guys had a count. You're some people affected in Southeast.
But I don't know if you collected the information in the survey, but I'm curious as to what people did for their alternate water sources. Did they have to go out and buy bottled water? Were there places
Sure. Absolutely. I know that with Toledo-Lucas County Health Department was really great with, I believe it was all of the above. Water was being handed out. They set up sites immediately around the area. Emergency response got involved. I know National Guard came up. A declaration of emergency for the state was declared by our governor. I believe it was a reverse osmosis for one of their systems where people would come in, fill up jugs, and they were also handing out water at other sites. But I believe in the area they set up, if I remember the map, don't hold me to this, I saw a presentation from somebody from Toledo. I think it was maybe about 16 sites up around the area within the first, I would say by Saturday morning, those sites were set up.
And this is what information you have about water?
We asked in general what alternative water sources were used, so we know that people specified purchased water, so that would be bottled water, or did they go to a water distribution site, but we more or less focused on how they received that information about where the water distribution sites were, so we didn't get into too many specifics about what they were getting when they went there.
Hi, John from the Area Waterborne Disease, the CDC, for an excellent presentation.
Thanks.
In response to this, I don't know how many people are aware, the EPA has issued or are developing a health advisory that they're hoping to roll out this summer, and that will address situations like this where there's a bloom that threatens a municipal water system. Do you know whether, I don't know if you can speak at all, the plans that are in place in Ohio to do things differently as far as communicating with the public if this were to happen again, or any other discussions that have happened? I don't know if you would know. It seems like everyone is scrambling and trying to figure out what this means.
Right. It's we've definitely applied the regulations. So we've already changed we have the human animal illness report forms that come in through our bureau. So we already put up the guidance on that it's 0.3 for school-aged children and younger for at least microcystin for a drinking water supply, 0.3 parts per billion. And for adults or school-aged and older is going to be 1.5 parts per billion. So it used to be 1 part per billion. Honestly, the only thing, because it's happened so recently, we don't have plans in place. I know there is something to be talked about, because when it comes to public health messaging, I know knowing my department, we're probably going to go on the protective side, which we'll be focusing on that 0.3, because it can get pretty confusing when you're talking about two separate guidelines. So I believe we would act kind of in a protective manner. However, no decisions have been made officially, but I have heard the area talking, so it could get confusing with having different levels for different ages, but probably be more protective with that 0.3. Sure. No, but I'm about to go look at it. That's a really good question. No, we did not stratify like that. The questions were pretty much a proportion of each answer, but nope, I will be looking into that, Russ. That's a great point.